And welcome back to Extra Feature Interviews. Today we have a fantastic horror film, or is it a horror comedy? Who knows? Not a lot of comedy, but a little bit. It's The Ice Cream Truck, and we have the great director, Megan Friel Johnson, with us. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad you could fill in. I know it was last minute, but it all worked out perfectly. That was great.
Yeah.
So how long has this film been out?
It came out in select theaters August 18th, and then it just came out on DVD November 14th, and it's also now currently in Redbox.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, in Canada, we don't have Redbox. They got rid of it.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Gone.
You know, Redbox is a pretty cool thing because it allows people who still really love physical copies of movies kind of a place to go, you know, with all of the video stores kind of being gone. Some people still don't do video on demand, so Redbox is cool in that way that you can still, you know, shop around, and they do carry indies, which is kind of great.
I think that's awesome. I really think I always like going to the video store and seeing something different that I didn't know about and take the chance. I always thought that was the best part of it. And I'm glad you have that option with Redbox. Yeah, we had Redbox up in Canada for maybe 6 months to a year and then disappeared. Didn't last.
Oh, really? I wonder why. Do you guys have more video stores than we do?
We don't.
You don't? Okay.
There's not one in my town. Not one. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I wish. I mean, I get, like I said, most of my films come from directors like yourself recommending them to me or just people sending them to me and telling me to watch them. I do like physical copies, so I'm very fussy about that.
Are you? Yeah.
I find it's hard for me. I can't get all, I have a giant TV and not everything will stream on it, so I got to plug in my computer. Like, it's just a lot of work for me. I just rather put in the disc and go.
I'm both. Like, we have a lot of TVs in our house, and I have kids, and, you know, we have some TVs have DVD players, but I was very anti having my kids have a TV in their room, so upstairs, like in their playroom, they have a small TV with a built-in DVD player, and that's all it has. It has no cable, no internet, and they think it's, like, the coolest thing ever, because it's, like, you can only put a DVD in that TV, and they kind of love it, so I'm happy that they get to experience a little bit of that, you know?
Well, that's great. Yeah, my kids do not have TVs in their bedroom, so that's totally it.
Yeah.
They have iPads, and we have Netflix.
Mine don't either. I feel kind of strongly about that. I don't know why. Maybe it's the time frame when we grew up, you know?
Maybe. I'm agreeing with you 100%. So your film opened in theaters, so did it open just in a few selected ones in L.A.?
It was just in L.A.
Nothing in New York?
Not in New York, no. But it did get pretty good reviews from the L.A. papers and, like, the trades. And, you know, so it's important if your distributor is behind your film to give it a theatrical release, because it allows for the trades and the papers to pay more attention. So, and it just kind of gives you a wider reach if they do like the film, so.
Well, I think the film is excellent. I mean, I thought your casting was immensely well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I mean, I did make notes on people, but then I looked up the credits. I mean, these are all solid working actors.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped your film a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, The Ice Cream Truck was my second film. And for anyone who doesn't know, The Ice Cream Truck is about a mid-30s woman who kind of moves from progressive Seattle back to her suburban hometown, which is probably a little bit more conservative. And she moves ahead of her family, who are kind of tying up loose ends. So she kind of opens the home alone. And, you know, she's alone, and she's a writer. She was a young mom. It's kind of the first time that she's been alone in a long time. And, you know, she kind of gets herself into some trouble. And meanwhile, there's, a dangerous ice cream man lurking, and it's a lot. There are a lot of layers going on in the film, and it's kind of funny, and it's kind of scary, and it's moody, and it's very... I think it's a little more reminiscent of the horror films, maybe from the 70s and 80s. And yeah, it's a fun watch. And Deanna Russo is the star, and she's excellent in it.
Okay, well, you've gotten into the film, so we can start there. Your opening music reminds me a lot of 80s horror films, like Halloween. It would totally came back to me.
Yeah.
Well, was that an attempt, or was this something you were interested in, or what was the...
I mean, I'm a huge horror buff and a horror fan, but the horror films that I love are more like Roman Polanski, Dario Argento, John Carpenter-esque. You know, I'm not really... As much as I, like, enjoyed Hostel and movies like that, I'm not really... You know, and I loved the first Saw, but, like, I'm not into kind of that industrial, like, torture horror. I like moody, kind of classic horror. And the films of that time made music a character, essentially. They made, the music was very profound and in your face, and I love that part of the genre. So I wasn't out to make it seem like John Carpenter. I just wanted to make sure that the music was really strong.
It was amazing. I have to say it brought me back. The music for Halloween was very strong, and I thought the music was really strong in this too at times.
Yeah. I mean, there's always, you know, influences that you give to your composer, and I had worked with this composer on my first film as well, and I knew that I wanted kind of like a mix of like 80s horror, but like also, like, I love 80s scores like Risky Business and Tangerine Dream, like, just where, like, the music is really, it kind of in your face. So,
perfect.
I liked it.
Perfect job. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah, he's
music.
Great. The composer's name is Michael Boateng, and I will have him score every movie that I do because he's just, like, we just get each other, and I love that part of post-production is really fine-tuning the score. Like, it's a kind of chill-inducing process when you have seen your film and then you see it with the, you know, with the music, and you're like, oh, it's so good.
So where did you find a super creepy old ice cream truck? I have to ask.
You know, I knew I didn't want it to be a gross stickers peeling off, scary ice cream truck, and I, you know, I lived in LA where there were many ice cream trucks at the time that I was writing this, and there were mostly those, and then there was this, there were a few that looked kind of retro, and so that was what I wanted to do. I looked on Craigslist for a while to potentially maybe buy one or rent one. And I found these guys that were selling, like, an old milk truck that was restored. And so I contacted them, and I was told them what I was doing. And it turned out that their company restores milk trucks and bakery trucks from the 60s. And I was, like, essentially begged, like, would you please give me a deal? And, like, we can work on this together. You can sell it after. And they were totally cool with it. They were like, that sounds super fun. And... I totally lucked out. I have to say it was serendipitous, and they turned out to be just really great guys. It was awesome. So they made the truck. They typically do what's called Divco milk trucks or Harvester Metros. And, that's the bakery kind. And that's what we ended up using is I preferred that kind, and it's called a Harvester Metro. And so they painted it and restored it to the specs, you know, the white with the, you know, I'd seen a few of them, but the white with the kind of mint green and, you know, the interior. And so it was a collaborative process, and they were just super into it. And, you know, they put a cooler in there, and, you know, and then the art department kind of did the rest, but it was pretty awesome.
Oh, I thought it was really, really cool, the ice cream truck. I'm like, that is just awesome. Yeah. And that's
if it looked scary automatically, it would be so kind of B-movie horror, and we were kind of going for more like a whimsical art house horror, so it was important that it seemed a little, it didn't seem as threatening. It seemed cool looking, not so obvious that there, you know, was a murderer driving it, essentially.
Yeah, before we got to that, I have a few. There was real ice cream there, too. I was wondering at the beginning, am I going to see ice cream, or is it just presumed there's ice cream?
Sometimes it was real. It wasn't always real.
Okay, because a couple times when he goes to the scoop, I'm like, that looks like real ice cream.
When it was chocolate ice cream, it was real. When he shows the ice cream, it's not real. And when he eats the ice cream, it was mashed potatoes.
Really?
Yeah, because it kept melting, and yeah, when he eats it for a second, it's mashed potatoes. And now every time I watch it, I'm like, he clearly eats it because it's cold mashed potatoes.
I had no idea. It didn't look like ice cream to me.
That's great.
I did not notice that. I will be honest. Now, I'm going to go back to something you said earlier about Polanski, because uh-huh. the ice cream when she's talking to Jessica, the neighbor.
Yeah.
Mary, I really got a really – I thought that she was the killer. Somebody on the street was the killer. I thought, well, the ice cream man's got to be too easy.
Yeah.
And then I got that – you were saying with Polanski. So are you going – maybe I'm reaching here. A Repulsion theme?
I love Repulsion. I've actually – the one I haven't seen is The Tenant, believe it or not. I love Repulsion, yes. That was definitely a film that affected me. I just felt like, to me, the brooding films of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I mean, even with Hitchcock, there's a thickness in the air when characters talk, and that's something that to me as a viewer, puts me on the edge of my seat. So I try to kind of create that atmosphere in my films, all of my films. So I want you to not know what's going on and who is suspect. So I try to just create that throughout.
You did a perfect job then, because I was getting them like, is it her? Is it? Because then they brought the other neighbor wives in a little bit after that. And they went into the barbecue. I'm like, am I looking at a Stepford Wives situation? You had me guessing.
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of scary things for, you know, I'm a late 30s mom, and there are things that are scary to me, and they're not always so obvious, and like, you know, being around phony people is not something I enjoy. So I tend to like throw that into my horror films because it's horrific to me. And there's some of that in Suburbia, I think.
I thought this film could take place on my street. It worked so well for me. Because, I mean, I'm one of these neighbors been here for a while.
Where are you in Canada?
I'm in Toronto, but I'm in Ajax, so I'm in a very suburb area, exactly where this film takes place.
Okay. I've been walking through Toronto for a little bit, so I know some of the suburbs.
Okay, well, I'm half an hour from downtown Toronto. I grew up in downtown Toronto.
Yeah.
But now I live out here, and I was laughing at this film because we have an ice cream truck. I have that creepy neighbor. I'm like, oh, my God, this is my life without a killer. It's perfect. So, yeah, I was just kind of wondering. And she goes to the barbecue. I'm like, okay, where is this going? I was waiting for something, and I kept trying to guess, like I said, what was going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting film because, like, some people are like, it has a pretty good rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but, like, you know, most people really enjoy it, but, like, some people, like, hate it, you know? And it's like, I think you just get it or you don't, you know? It's not your typical horror film. It's a little different. It's definitely, I wouldn't say it's just a female point of view horror film because a lot of guys have really liked it. But, you know, it's not a torture porn by any means. It's more of an old school, like, slow build.
I wouldn't have enjoyed it. I'm like you. I don't like the torture porn. It's just not my thing. I first saw a movie I love, and that's enough for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I do have a question. I wrote down, how much water did that kid spray on the woman? Like, he soaked her hard.
Well, he didn't soak her, and that's actually my son.
is that your son?
It was my son.
I love him. Yeah,
only because he was free labor, not because I want him to be an actor or anything like that.
No, it's all good.
But it was only two takes, and the first take, our director did it, and he was, like, kind of ginger with Deanna, and so didn't get her very much in the second take, which is the one that we used, was me.
Oh.
And I'm the one that soaked her. Because, you know, with something like that, like, your wardrobe is ruined, and, you know, like, everything has to be totally reset. So, like, as an indie filmmaker, I'm experienced now in the sense, you know, that you got to get it right because it costs a lot of time when you don't. So that was one of those things that we, you know, had to get right. So I did it myself.
Then I think right after that, you set up she goes on the phone and she calls her husband. I did write that down. And I find her persona changes. We get the real character that she's not really happy with the neighbor and doesn't really want to hang out with them.
Right.
I did like that. I think that's a suburbia paranoia. I really felt that was creeping in.
Yeah.
And then you brought in the moving guy, who I loved.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And I'm like, is he the killer? Like, that's what's next.
He is a huge horror icon. Jeff Daniel Phillips is in, like, every Rob Zombie movie. He was in Westworld. Like,
Maybe that's where I know him from. He looked familiar, but I didn't look him up, actually, because he wasn't in enough. I'm like, I'll just look the first three up.
Yeah, he's in a ton of stuff, and he really dug the project, and I think that he brought a lot to that character because that character, you know, meets the eye, seems like an, like nothing character, but is actually a far more important character. And I just thought he was fantastic. And that's something, you know, women have to deal with a lot, is just kind of that predatorial thing, you know, with certain men. I mean, it's so funny because I wrote this movie forever ago when it came out, before all the kind of Harvey Weinstein stuff. And there's a lot of kind of undertones of that kind of predatory behavior in the film. But yeah, Jeff Daniel Phillips was great because it's like when you're alone, if someone is in your house, to the people who haven't seen the film, he's the moving guy and he just doesn't know when to leave and is creepy. And, you know, that's something that's scary to women that I think if a man is making a horror film or writing a horror film, like they don't think about necessarily the things, the subtleties that are scary to women, you know. They're in their everyday life.
I think you presented it perfectly. I did get it. I'm like, oh, my God, like, what's going on here? And he wasn't like, it was so weird. He goes, is the TV going here? Do you want to go to the bedroom? I'm like, who? I just don't act like that. I'm like, there must be men that do.
People don't, you know, but, there's some people that you encounter as a woman
I took it as that. I took it as this is something I obviously am not a perv because I don't get this. But anyway,
yeah, exactly.
It's normal to me. So yeah. I thought that worked well. Who did your lighting? I love the lighting on the movie. I always thought the lighting was shot well. I had no issues with your shot choices.
Ah, that's so nice. Our cinematographer was Stephen Tringali, and he brought his whole team with him. And he did my last film as well. And he just has a really good eye. Not as many of the actors, but the majority of the people who did my last film, Rebound, did this as well. And, I think they did a great job. I mean, they really did. We wanted an artistic look and I would say the look of it changes a little bit, throughout Mary's story.
I think it changes about, I'd say almost the third act, I guess, and I find it really changes,
yeah.
I would say. I find that it's getting a very different film in the first third.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you did a three-act structure or not, but I do see it there. Like, I see, okay, the beginning, we don't really know her, we get to know her, and then things happen without her.
Yeah, she definitely has a character arc.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
Yeah.
And I mean, Matt has a character arc too. Max.
Yeah, yeah.
And I even thought you gave good kudos to Max's friends. Like, they just were one-off characters.
Yeah.
And Max's girlfriend has a character.
Here's a piece of trivia for you. I think you have kids, right?
I do. I have two.
The girl who plays Bree, who is one of the other girlfriend, is the voice of Edith in the Despicable Me series.
Oh, okay. Then I know who she is. Yes, definitely. I've seen all those Despicable Me movies. Oh, look at you. That's what I said. Your cast is so strong. I think it helps your movie so much. I did write down the funny lines. I do like your throwaway lines make me laugh. Like, I need a really good vibrator. I have a really good vibrator. Or I need a really good vibrator.
Both lines you liked?
I have a really good vibrator. Yeah. When she's at the party, I'm like, I couldn't stop laughing.
Well, to me, I thought it was so funny that, like, that it would be acceptable to cheat, you know, for someone conservative, but not acceptable to use a vibrator.
Yes.
You know, like, it's so behind the times, because that would be like, you're an independent progressive woman, you know, and, you know, rather than finding another way to, you know, need a male validation.
I thought that was great. I thought that was funny. It made me laugh. I did have a question. You mentioned podcasts. It said in. Are you a fan of podcasts?
Yeah, and all of my friends are fans of podcasts. So, you know, it seems like something that I think, you know, my age and younger is super into it, you know, but not necessarily. You know, the older generation, I think, is, and I mean this only based on, like, my parents. Like, I don't have a ton of examples, but they're like, what? You know what I mean? They can't even, like, figure out how to download the apps and, you know.
I know.
Yes, I am a fan of podcasts.
I thought that was awesome. Like, I thought your film was very contemporary. I find it most of the stuff. It made sense to me.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was good. I don't hear that often in film. I find people are just very contained in their world, and I quite like the world. Uh-huh. Oh, does Nancy, you had Nancy, Mary running.
Uh-huh.
Now, she didn't look like a runner to me. I know it's a weird thing to write down. I'm like, she doesn't look like a runner, but.
Like, she didn't look like a runner as she was running, or prior to that, she didn't look like a
prior
runner?
Prior to that. I'm kind of like, that doesn't look like her thing. I thought it would, another hobby might be.
I mean, I jog occasionally, and I don't look like a runner either. I think that, you know, you can be a jogger to blow off steam without being, like, a veins-bulging runner, I think, as a woman. I think there are two types. There's, like, a... You know, the occasional, like, you know, two times a week, or, you know, the hardcore runners. Like, Renee Zellweger is, like, a big runner. I think she looks like a runner.
Yes, yes, I'll absolutely give you that.
You know? Yeah. We all try. We all try to get our exercise. And I think as a woman, like, for me, I love to listen to music when I'm walking or running. So there's a therapeutic outlet to just kind of getting outside and doing something.
Oh, I agree with you on that one. Absolutely, 100% agreement on the exercise. You have the only one house for all your shots, right?
I have what?
The one house. Her house is used for the party and shoes for everything.
Well, I had Mary's house.
Yes.
And then I had, Christina's house, who is played by Lisa Ann Walter. So that's the barbecue party.
I thought that might be the back. Oh, it's two. Okay, I thought you might use the back of Mary's house because we don't really see it.
No. Then we had that, and then Bree's house, where a double homicide takes place.
Yeah.
So that was house number three. So yeah, just those, and then the park location. Yeah, so we had four locations.
Oh, so how did you find your houses? Were they easy, or did you have to rent them, or how did that work?
We used Airbnb.
Awesome.
I mean, the people knew that we were doing it, but I try to keep that on the DL before that, like, gets ruined, because, you know, film locations are really expensive. And not to mention, even I looked at a lot of film locations, and none of them were right. What's nice about Airbnb is you can, like, on the down low, look at a house and see if it's right by the pictures without having to really, like, talk to anybody. You know what I mean?
I never heard that. That's perfect. Oh, now we're getting in trouble. I guess I should edit that out.
I think, actually, they are starting, like, a branch or a subsidiary for film. And a lot of the Airbnb locations do charge more if you are filming there.
Oh.
So, they know about it. It's not a secret.
Okay, backing up. So, then I'll answer a question I had written down. When you're having the double homicide and the ice cream on the couch, it's a white couch.
I know.
And I'm like, who eats ice cream on a white couch?
No, everything in that particular house was white. It was pretty hilarious, actually.
Okay. These are just notes I make as I watch these films. I'm just like, okay. Oh, and last...
That was the furniture. We didn't provide the house, or the couch. I would say that everything else in that scene was provided by the art department, but I think that couch happened to be there. So we had to kind of work with the white. Chocolate ice cream. White couch.
It made me laugh. As a parent, I'm like, oh my God, no way.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
That was. I did have one more comment on the ice cream. I know I keep going back to the ice cream, but it was one of my fixations. Why is the shake so small when the two of them buy shakes at the end of the film?
Well, that would probably be a question for the art department, but maybe she just wanted a small. I know I couldn't. When I order a shake at McDonald's, I get a small. So.
Oh, okay. Because I can never. I always want a big milkshake, but maybe I have one once a year. That would be me once a year, and I'd have one to be over it.
That's hilarious.
I'm totally not an ice cream person. I'm sorry.
I like ice cream. I'm not a huge ice cream person, but my favorite ice cream flavor is Rocky Road. Okay. And so when I do eat ice cream, I love it, but I would probably say I'm more of a chocolate person.
Okay, fair enough. How did your cast come together is what I want to know. Because, I mean, it's an amazing cast. Do you know these people, or you hired them, or where did they come from?
Deanna Russo is a friend of mine, or we had never worked together. And even when you're friends with an actor in Hollywood, you still like don't want to impose and be like, hey, want to be in my movie? You know, I still like, I approached her. I sent her the script and I was like, hey, would you ever just give me notes? And I made it seem like I was not interested in her for it. And she loved it. And I was like, well, if you don't find anyone bigger, I would love to do this. So I was like, okay, great. Like, I knew that I wanted her for it, but I just didn't really want to ask her outright. So she signed on first. And then Hillary Barrettford, who is the nosy neighbor, the blonde,
Jessica. She
was an executive producer on it. We had known each other prior. She kind of came on in the early stages, actually, and she found me Lisa Ann Walter, who plays Max's mom, and she found me Max. So because she was an actress and just knew everybody, and she had really good taste. And we had someone originally, actually, who was in Mad Men for the ice cream man. I will not say who, but it did not work out. It fell through towards, like, sort of last minute. And this manager I knew had recommended Emil Johnson. And she was like, he can do anything. You should really see his work. And I was like, okay, whatever. She's like, I'm going to make him put himself on tape. And I'm the kind of person that, like, can tell when someone's an amazing actor. And I'm pretty picky about it. And I watched his audition, and we had been to so many people. That was the hardest role to cast because, sorry, my dogs are going crazy. Okay, no. So that was the hardest role to cast because it couldn't be someone who was too funny, and it couldn't be someone who was so, so scary. And it was just like a fine line. And so I saw Emil's audition and I was like blown away. And I was like, that's it. And I didn't care that he wasn't a name. He was the right person for the part. And I was like, I'm sold. And we didn't go to anyone else after that. It was actually the only audition we saw because the majority of the people that we went out to were names. So we just like, I can't imagine it being somebody else because it probably could have really ruined the film if it was not the right person. And I thought he nailed it.
You keep saying names. I don't mean to be rude to your cast. Your cast works perfectly fine. I wouldn't want a big name in this film.
Well,
it made me guess more.
When we're going out to financiers, they usually want a name. And you know, Hollywood is still, I would say, a little bit sexist still because the foreign markets tend to want a name, and they want that name to be a male. When you're cast, this is just some inside information. So when you're casting, sometimes it's like that, and I'm doing a new film and I'm not even like paying attention to that because I'm going for names for my women, but it's part of, you know, certain countries, they, you know, they want Jean-Claude Van Damme or whoever, you know what I mean? Even though they're not necessarily right for a part, they want someone that they know, you know, so financiers want you to get a name for a certain part because then they know that their investment is protected. Right. So everyone's like, let me know when you cast the Ice Cream Man. Let me know when you cast the Ice Cream Man. So it just got to a certain point that I'm like, I'd rather make a better movie than just like get some random name because he's more known and risk, you know, jeopardizing the vision, which was far more like a Norman Bates type character than some like behemoth scary Ice Cream Man, you know?
Yeah, but Emil emotes so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he was fantastic.
He's perfect. Like, I like the look. Like, before I knew he was the killer,
yeah.
I'm like, he is awesome. I really like his look. I like the way he moved. I like the way he asked questions.
Yeah, he had an intensity in his eye. I had him, like, look at a lot of Twilight Zone episodes, and he's actually from Norway. And so he does not live here. And what's a funny piece of trivia is that I had cast him, and then when I went to Jeff Daniel Phillips for The Delivery Man, Jeff Daniel Phillips was like, he loved the project, but what sealed the deal for him is Emil Johnson, because I guess randomly a few years back when Emil was in L.A., doing some table reading for something, he had met Jeff. So Jeff had done a reading with Emil, and Jeff said yes because he knew by my casting Emil that I was going in a different direction with this film. And so that showed him what my taste level was for this, and that was a big contributor to him saying yes. How funny is that?
I think that's great.
And Emil had never done a U.S. Film before.
Yeah, I looked him up, and I'm like, nope.
Yeah. I know. But it was like, I couldn't believe that they knew each other, you know?
That's awesome. Well, it tells you it's a small world.
Emil is a classically trained, you know, actor. He's, like, one of the leads in, like, the Norwegian theater company for, like, the country.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Like, he's a big deal in Scandinavia.
Well, good for I loved him. I absolutely loved him. So like I said. Is there going to be a sequel?
I mean, probably not, but there could be. Hey, if enough people wanted one.
I think there is. I really think this film's going to do well in the secondary market once the word gets out how good it is.
I think it's going to be a word-of-mouth film. And I, you know, there was a lot of press and a lot of reviews, but like VOD, I mean, there's so many movies. There's so much content, you know? So it's like, how do you hear about everything? I hope people like it and tell people to watch it.
Well, I will. I mean, podcasts do help. I mean, I enjoy the film, and my listeners will listen to it, and other people will, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's a really, like I said, solid cast, and it's a solid film. It will do fine. I have faith, absolute faith in this film.
Thank you.
It will do well on VOD.
Had a great time working on it, and we, you know, we made the exact movie we wanted to make and didn't really compromise the vision, and I mean that from everybody. So, you know, I do think when everybody likes a project and likes working together, you can kind of see it in the final product.
So
hopefully, yeah.
How was financing for this film? You're saying you were having problems because you didn't have a name. So how did that all come together?
Every film is hard to finance. Every single film. It's the worst part of filmmaking. It's really, really hard to get money. So you have to strategize, like, who you get in your movie, how, you know, how great is your script, and I've been a producer. Before I was a filmmaker, I was a producer. So I've been a producer for, like, 12 years, and it was only because it was so hard to get films made that I switched to director and made a really small movie first, because I was like, I got into this business to make movies. And the recession hit, and it was even harder to get financing. I think VOD changed things a lot. So between the recession, which is now fine, but VOD and piracy and all that stuff, it's really hard to make your money back. So unless you have like a huge star, it's tough. So, you know, think about all these movies that you see on VOD that have like Scarlett Johansson or Owen Wilson that you're like, what the hell is that movie that you've never heard of? You know, there's just so many, there's so much content. So it's always hard to get financing. So the reason that you try to get someone bigger in your movie is so the financiers can justify, you know, they can justify their investment. I mean, it's just always, as a producer, like, it's just hard, you know. It's harder, it's almost harder to finance a smaller film than it is some, like, $10 million studio film, because the studio is already paying for it. So, okay. Indie film is just like that. What's great about the horror community, though, is that horror fans will see everything. Whereas the indie community, like, back when I was younger in like the 90s and the early 2000s, the indie community was really passionate, and indie sites would talk about indie films. Now indie sites are talking about $5 million films. So there's kind of that void in the indie world, whereas it's still alive and well. The passion is there in the horror world. And thankfully I love horror, because it's easier to be an indie filmmaker in the horror community.
I think I'm discovering that lately, that I get sent a lot of horror films to watch or comedy.
Yeah, it's there's an audience, and people will still people. You try to get an indie drama financed, people will just start laughing, because it's so much harder with renting on VOD. You're not in a video store like looking at the, you know, the key art of these like indie films. So unless you're like a big movie with like, you know, like Lady Bird, which just came out, which I can't wait to see. Or, you know, something with like Michelle Williams. Like, those people make those indies, you're aware of them. But there's a million other indie dramas or indie romances that you've never heard of and will never see. With the horror community, there's so many horror sites that they can all kind of collectively talk about stuff, and it allows for more awareness. And I hope the rest of the indie world will kind of continue to, like, try to get better about that, because it's like all they're doing is talking about like Noah Baumbach films. That doesn't really bode well for the smaller indie filmmaker, you know? And festivals are far different than they used to be. It's like Sundance was so great, but now you've got like 11,000 films being submitted to Sundance, and they pick, you know, 30 or whatever. So all these other films, it's like, how do they get the awareness? So it's tough. It's tough for an indie filmmaker. So that's why, you know, it's important for people to support indie film, because, you know, the studio films have the support. It's the smaller filmmakers need to be discovered.
I just want to go into your comment. Do we consider Noah Baumbach an indie filmmaker still?
I don't either.
I mean, I've seen all his movies.
But that's my point. You know, sites like IndieWire, that's all they talk, or the IndieWire is literally posting about the Avengers. And it's like, well, then where do we go? Where do we go to look for, like, the small, small films? You know, there needs to be bigger sites that can discover the smaller films. And, you know, it's... But the masses still go to the big indie sites, and the indie sites want to cover the big stuff, and it's just kind of, it's a catch 22. But the horror community, however, will treat filmmakers the same, whether they're James Wan or someone no one's ever heard of, and they will base it on the content, and they're really cool about it. And that's why I'm like a huge fan of the horror community and the horror websites, and I'm very grateful to them, because my previous film was like a micro budget, and they gave it the time of day, and that's so important, because it makes filmmakers feel like they have a chance to put out good content or try, you know?
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad your film's doing well. I'm glad you got a theatrical release here. I'm glad you're the first person I've talked to who's ever had a film in Redbox, so I think that's great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I'm thankful to Uncorked, who is my distributor, who's been amazing. And you know, they really liked the film and have supported it, and you know, they've been great. They primarily do horror or foreign films. They also do family films. They have a lot of really good content, I think.
Do you think your film will make it on Netflix? Because I think it looks like a Netflix film. It's quality good enough.
I hope so. They're going to pitch it to Netflix. I hope Netflix picks it up. Well,
I think the quality is there. I think the film production's there. I mean, it's as good as these Christmas movies I've been watching.
Pitch it to Hulu and Netflix and all of that. And, you know, again, I think word of mouth is important. I mean, I get messages from people on, like, Facebook and Twitter who have seen the film and, you know, have questions, and I mean, I've been pleased. I was worried that people would turn on me a little bit because of the end, or that it's not a conventional horror. I wasn't really sure what people would think.
You have nothing to worry about. It's excellent, excellent, excellent. There you go.
But you never know, because like the horror community, like, are there not enough kills, or you know? And some people felt that way, but
I don't think it needed to be.
I don't think there needs to be. I would never want to write a kill for just the sake of adding a body count if it didn't really fit the story. That seems so silly to me.
But I think it worked perfectly for what it had. Like, I thought it took a little while to get to the first kill, I will say that.
Yeah.
But because I was guessing, that made me think more about the film before we got there. Like I said, I was trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, and that's a great fun scene. That's one of my favorite scenes in the film.
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Okay. And that's Bailey Ann Borders who plays the character in that scene. And she's in a lot of genre films. She was in a movie called Raise that people really like. And, she was awesome. She's a great actress. And I see big things for her. And I just, that was a really fun, really fun scene to shoot.
Okay. Fun question time. This is my favorite part of the show. Because this is my, your favorite film. You can give me a few. It's fine.
Honestly, the film that affected me most as, and I didn't know that I was going to be a filmmaker, I mean, until legit like 5 years ago.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I knew I was a producer, and I love storytelling. And my grandfather was Elmore Leonard, so I had writing in the blood. Like, I wrote when I was younger, but like I didn't really tap into that until the last 5 years. But I remember seeing this movie when I was, I must have been in high school or right out of that. Like, really changed my feeling of film, and that was Run Lola Run.
Oh, wow.
And it was just like, I couldn't believe the difference in storytelling and just like what you could do, you know, with nonlinear storytelling and the intensity and the visceral feeling. And that was probably, so I don't know if it's like my favorite movie ever, but it's the movie that probably like changed my whole perception of film.
Does that make you a director or want to be a producer-director? Was Run, Lola, Run then?
I don't think anything made me want to be a director, because I didn't know I wanted to be a director until I started writing. I can't really pick a favorite movie. I really can't. There's so many films I love. I like Hitchcock.
Okay, favorite Hitchcock film is one of my favorite discussions with people, so I'm wanting to hear this one.
Favorite film?
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite cliche film, I mean, I love Shawshank Redemption, even though that's such a cliche.
Yeah.
My favorite films are from auteurs, and I think it's because there's such an originality in what they're doing, and you can feel that they're an auteur.
Okay, Billy Wilder then? I'll throw out a weird name.
I mean, maybe, but I feel like more like Polanski. Who else? I love Tarantino. Let's think of who else.
I know, it's a hard question. I get a lot of answers.
It's a really hard question.
Perfect. Okay. Now, here's an easier question, at least I think it is. It's Friday night. You're hanging out. What film are you putting on?
What film am I putting on?
Yeah, I mean, people are over. They're all settling down. Could be kids.
Well, I've made people watch It Follows a lot in recent. Like, my recent favorites, because, again, we all, I feel like, go through stages. Like, It Follows and, like, House of the Devil are current favorites.
House of the Devil, really? It's got some odd shots in House of the Devil.
Yes, and you know, and those are both polarizing movies. I feel like my films are polarizing movies in that same kind of way. I recently saw Hush. I loved. Oh, and my favorite horror movie I've seen in a while would have to be The Invitation. Have you seen that?
I have not seen The Invitation. Oh,
God. It's on Netflix. Watch it immediately.
I'm writing it right now. I'm like, well,
immediately.
I'm supposed to be watching
this
Punisher.
This guy goes to his ex-wife's dinner party.
Okay. I will
and
watch
it. It's all of their group of friends are there, and he hasn't seen a lot of them in a really long time. And it's very, you're like not sure what's going to happen, and it's very uncomfortable and weird. And the director is Karen Kazuma.
Yeah.
Who did Girl Fight and Jennifer's Body.
I was about to say Jennifer's Body. That's what I know her for, Jennifer's Body.
Well, from what and she did Aeon Flux or whatever that I didn't see.
Oh,
but
terrible.
From what I've heard about her, she, like, Girl Fight was amazing, which I actually didn't see. But then she did these studio films. And then when she did The Invitation, she was back to being able to do what she wanted. And she did it with a company called Game Changer that supports, like, female directors. I think when the studio system gets involved, I think they mess with your vision a little bit. And I mean, I'm only speculating just from what I read, but I was floored by this film. I thought it was fantastic.
Okay.
I really, really liked it a lot.
I will watch it. You have my word.
So I like those movies that kind of make you think and are just kind of, they give you that kind of visceral feeling, I would say. In terms of, like, other genres, I just saw The Big Sick, and I cried like a maniac. And
I really loved it.
I did enjoy
The Big Sick. I did like it.
Did you like? I cried like a fool. And I was, like, laughing and crying at the same time, and I loved it.
I love stand-up comedy. I can't say I enjoyed his stand-up, but I enjoyed the film. If that makes any sense.
I enjoyed the film. I think he's really good at reaction lines.
Yes, 100%.
He's really strong. I actually produced a TV pilot for USA that he was one of the main characters in 2011, and the pilot did not get picked up, but we shot the pilot, and it was a 2-hour pilot, and he was a very big part of it. And he was so funny. And he just, like, his reaction time is what I think makes him so strong, is he's just really good at delivery. I thought it was great.
That's awesome. Okay, my last question, and then I promise I won't bug you anymore.
Don't bug me away.
You have kids, so this may be a different question. You're at the concession stand. What do you order?
Where am I?
You're at the movie theater store. You're at the theater. You're going to the theater. You're going to see a film. What are you
going to order? What would I order for my kids or what would I order
for
myself?
For yourself. I mean, yeah, usually it's me, but sometimes I have my kids with me, so my order would change. So I'll give you both options.
Okay. I can tell you what my entire family would order.
Oh, wow.
My kids would probably want either chocolate or popcorn, I would think. Or gummy bears. My husband would want nachos, and I would probably order a hot pretzel.
Oh, so then you would get along great. A hot pretzel is always my favorite thing.
I love a hot pretzel. I think it's, like, not the worst thing you can eat, and it's delicious, and it's carbs, and it comes with mustard and salt.
Yes.
That would be...
I'm totally with you on the hot pretzel. My kids always laugh at me because I won't buy it in Canada. We can't really find them.
Really?
They don't have them in stores. Yeah. We had Target up here. When we Target, they didn't serve hot pretzels. I was so mad.
Really? You can buy them in the frozen food section of your grocery store, I guarantee you.
We cannot buy them up here. I cannot find them. It drives me nuts. So I bring them when I go down to the U.S., I bring them back with me. They're like, do you have anything to clear? Yeah, hot pretzels. What? Like, I buy pretzels. Sorry.
Wow. That's hilarious.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for sending me the film. You were a great guest. I mean, I know more about Hollywood than I've known in a while. That's great.
I know. I'm sorry.
I love it.
I think with my mouth. But that is how it goes. It's hard to make indie films, you know. That's why, like, when people are trolls on the internet, I'm like, you don't even know what we go through to, like, make a tiny film happen, you know. Like, give us a break.
Oh, I'm learning more and more. The more I do these, the more I'm learning it. I love it. Because the part of filmmaking I know nothing about. I cannot direct anything. I can't act. I just do this. And people tell me I'm good at it. I just accept it and go on about my regular day afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I think with anybody who's doing, like, a creative field, you got to just, like, you know, give them credit for doing it because it's just, it's hard, you know? Even with, like, podcasts and, like, getting noticed. Like, if you're, someone's doing what they're, like, trying to do something they love, like, you got to support them. I feel like that for everybody.
Well, thank you so much. I will take that to heart.
Yeah. And thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So. Yeah, I want to thank you again for your time. And please make a sequel because I need that next. You know exactly why, and I'm not ruining it.
You're not the first person who has asked that. And I know what it would be titled, and it would be a different truck.
Oh, good. So there is a possibility. I'll take that as a possibility. Okay. Well, thank you, and you have a great night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.